Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a topic that sounds deceptively simple.
It really does.
But it's actually one of the deepest mysteries out there in both physics and, well, philosophy too. We're talking about nothing.
That's right. We're diving into Frank Close's fantastic little book, Nothing, a very short introduction. And, you know, for anyone listening who thinks nothing is just like an empty box.
Or just the absence of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Prepare for a bit of a shock.
Because that common sense idea, that intuitive feeling of emptiness, according to modern physics, is just fundamentally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today for you, the listener, is to sort of walk you through how quantum mechanics and relativity have completely transformed the vacuum.
Turn it from this idea of a void into something dynamic, structured, actually a something.
And why does this matter?
Well, the central question Frank Close digs into is, you know, what is nothing, really?
Hmm.
And the answer turns out to be crucial.
Crucial how?
Because the properties of this so-called emptiness, they're fundamental to why matter even has mass.
Wow, okay.
Why the universe looks the way it does, and even its ultimate fate, you know, the fact that it's expanding faster and faster.
So if you want to understand existence,
you absolutely have to get your head around non-existence first. It's kind of foundational.
Okay, quite a trip ahead then. Let's talk about our guide, Frank Close. It takes a special kind of person to explain this stuff clearly.
It really does. Frank Close is an emeritus professor of physics at Oxford, a fellow of Exeter College. He's not just, like, recounting history.
No, he's a theoretical particle physicist. He spent his whole career deep in the weeds of, you know, the fundamental building blocks of reality.
Quarks, gluons, quantum chromodynamics, really complex quantum field theory. That's his area.
And he's got deep ties to CERN in Geneva, right, where a lot of this happens.
Exactly. So what makes his view so distinctive is that he's not just an observer. He was actually involved in the science that redefined nothing.
Especially around the Higgs boson discovery.
Yes. He has that deep technical understanding. But crucially, he combines that with this amazing skill for communication. You see it in his other books, too.
He can translate the really dense technical stuff into something, well, accessible for people like us.
The perfect guide if you want to grasp how the universe works without needing, you know, a PhD in quantum field theory.
All right, so let's get into the book itself. What's the main journey Close takes us on? What's the central argument?
The core idea, really, is this historical journey. Yeah. It shows how the scientific concept of nothing has just kept changing.
Evolving.
Yeah, evolving dramatically. It starts as this passive idea, total absence, a void. And it ends up as this incredibly active foundational thing, a medium teeming with potential energy.
Right. And that journey covers millennia. Phase one, you mentioned, starts way back, ancient Greece.
Yep. The philosophical debates. Can a vacuum, what they called kenon, even logically exist? Parmenides saying no, the atomists saying yes.
And that debate goes on for ages until the scientific revolution. People like Torricelli, Pascal. They actually make a vacuum.
They prove experimentally, yeah, you can create an empty space. It's physically real.
Okay, so problem solved. We have nothing.
Well, that's phase two, the crisis moment in the 19th century. Physics hits a snag.
Ah, the ether.
The luminiferous ether, exactly. Light's proven to be a wave. Classical physics says waves need something to travel through, so they invent this medium.
But it didn't work out.
No, the famous Michelson-Morley experiment tried to detect it and nothing. That failure basically broke classical physics and paved the way for something new.
Which brings us to phase three. Modern reality. Einstein steps in.
First, special relativity throws out the ether. Then general relativity changes space itself into dynamic space-time.
So space isn't just a passive container anymore.
No, it has properties. And then quantum mechanics arrives. And that's where things get really wild. The vacuum becomes this seething froth of energy, fields, potential.
Wow. Okay. And the ultimate point Close makes
is that this quantum vacuum, this modern nothing, isn't just some weird theoretical footnote. It connects the tiniest scales to the very largest.
How so?
Its inherent energy, what we now call dark energy, is actually driving the accelerated expansion of the entire universe.
So it goes from a philosophical puzzle to basically dictating the fate of the cosmos.
Precisely. From kenon to cosmic dictator.
That's an incredible story arc. Let's dig into those early stages a bit more. That classical battle, Aristotle's idea, nature abhors a vacuum, held sway for like 2,000 years.
Yeah, it sounds strange to us now, but his logic was compelling back then. A void has no properties, so how could anything move through it? It seemed illogical.
So it needed an experiment to break that thinking. Torricelli in the 17th century.
Evangelista Torricelli, Galileo's student, he did that famous experiment in 1643. Mercury in a tube, flipped it over into a dish.
And the mercury level drops, leaving a space at the top.
The Torricellian vacuum, the first sustained man-made vacuum. It proved, look, emptiness can physically exist. Aristotle was wrong on this.
But just as they figure that out, physics complicates it again in the 19th century.
Right. If a vacuum can exist, why invent the ether? It feels like a step backward, filling space up again.
Why did they feel they needed it?
Well, based on the physics of the time, they really thought they did. Maxwell's work showed light behaves like a wave. And waves, back then, absolutely needed a medium.
Like sound waves need air or water waves need water?
Exactly. So light needed the luminiferous ether. But this created a huge paradox.
The ether paradox.
Yeah. For light to travel so incredibly fast, the ether had to be unbelievably rigid, stiffer than steel.
Okay.
But at the same time, planets like Earth had to move through it with absolutely zero resistance, zero drag.
Which makes no sense. Rigid and offering no resistance.
Totally contradictory, logically impossible.
And the proof it was impossible came from Michelson and Morley in 1887. They tried to measure the effect of Earth moving through this supposed ether wind.
By looking for tiny changes in the speed of light in different directions, and they found absolutely nothing. Zilch.
A null result. But a hugely important one.
Probably the most important failed experiment in history. Because that null result forced the revolution. It showed classical physics was incomplete.
Enter Einstein. Special Relativity, 1905, he just gets rid of the ether.
Essentially, yes. He proposed something radical. The speed of light is constant for all observers, no matter how they're moving. It doesn't need a medium. The vacuum could be truly empty again.
But he wasn't finished messing with nothing, was he? General Relativity, 1915.
Right. That changed everything again. Space wasn't just an empty stage anymore. It became dynamic space-time, a fabric that could be warped and curved by mass and energy.
So even empty space now had geometric properties. It could bend, stretch, even ripple with gravitational waves.
Which we've now detected. So that's the end of the classical story, more or less. But the quantum picture, that's where Close really gets into the modern view. And it moves beyond geometry into energy.
Governed by Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Yes. Applied to energy and time, that principle has a staggering consequence.
Which is?
That any region of space, no matter how small or empty you think it is, can never have precisely zero energy for any length of time. It has to fluctuate.
It can't just sit still at zero.
Nope. There's always this minimum level of activity, this constant bubbling and fluctuating.
And that fluctuation creates what Close calls the seething, turbulent foam.
Exactly. The vacuum isn't quiet. It's constantly producing pairs of virtual particles and antiparticles, like an electron, and its antiparticle, the positron.
Virtual, meaning not quite real.
Meaning they exist for an incredibly short time. They basically borrow energy from the vacuum, pop into existence, and then almost instantly annihilate each other, paying the energy back.
Like a tiny energy loan, taken in a repaid super fast.
That's a good way to put it. It happens so fast we can't directly see these virtual particles.
So if we can't see them, how on earth do we know this storm of being is actually real? It sounds a bit like theoretical hand waving.
Ah, but that's where the experimental proof comes in. The smoking gun is called the Casimir effect.
Okay, what's that?
It's empirical evidence. Real, measurable proof that this energy of nothing is real.
How does it work?
Okay, imagine you take two perfectly smooth, uncharged metal plates, and you place them incredibly close together in a perfect vacuum, like microns apart.
Very close.
What you measure is that these plates are actually pushed towards each other. There's a real physical force between them.
And it's not gravity or electricity?
Nope. It comes directly from the vacuum itself, from those virtual particles.
Wow.
Think about all the virtual particles popping in and out of existence everywhere. Outside the plates, particles of all possible wavelengths can exist. But between the plates, because the gap is so tiny, only virtual particles with wavelengths that fit neatly into that gap can exist. Fewer possible particles can pop up there.
Ah, so there are more particles pushing on the outside of the plates than on the inside.
Exactly. It's a pressure imbalance caused by the energy of nothing. The vacuum energy outside is slightly greater than inside, and that difference creates a net force pushing the plates together.
Wow. So a measurable force literally coming from emptiness.
It's tangible proof that the quantum vacuum is real and dynamic, not just an idea.
That is incredible. And this vibrant emptiness, it's also responsible for something absolutely fundamental, right? Like mass.
Yes. This leads us to another huge puzzle from the 1970s. Why do some fundamental particles, like photons, have zero mass and zip around at light speed?
While others, like the W and Z bosons that carry the weak nuclear force, are really heavy.
Exactly. Why the difference? The answer, proposed in the 60s and confirmed much later, lies in the Higgs field.
Right, the famous Higgs field. Close uses that great analogy. You know, it's like a kind of cosmic molasses.
Yeah, or treacle, pervading the entire vacuum, all of space.
So how does that give things mass?
Well, the idea is that fundamental particles moving through this field interact with it. Some interact very strongly.
Like trying to walk through actual molasses.
Right. They encounter resistance, a kind of drag. And that resistance, that interaction, is what we perceive as the particle's inertia, its mass.
Like the celebrity trying to push through a crowded room analogy. They get slowed down by interactions.
That's another good one. Particles that interact strongly with the Higgs field get bogged down. They acquire mass.
And particles that don't interact much or at all.
Like photons, they just zip straight through without resistance. They remain massless and travel at the speed of light.
And this whole mechanism, it kicked in early in the universe's history through something called symmetry breaking.
Yes. As the universe cooled down after the Big Bang, think about water freezing into ice. When water is liquid, it's highly symmetric, looks the same in all directions. When it freezes, it forms crystals. That symmetry is broken. Specific directions become important.
So the Higgs field froze.
In a sense. At very high temperatures, the field was sort of inactive, symmetric. As the universe cooled below a critical temperature, the field condensed into a stable, non-zero value everywhere.
Like picking a direction.
Exactly. That condensation broke an underlying symmetry of the fundamental forces. And in doing so, it endowed many fundamental particles, quarks, electrons, W and Z bosons, with mass.
Allowing them to slow down, eventually form stable atoms, form us.
Precisely. So our mass isn't some intrinsic property we carry around. It's the result of our fundamental particles constantly interacting with the structure of the vacuum, with this Higgs field.
The substance of nothing gives us substance. That's profound.
It really is.
Okay, final big connection. This energy inherent in the quantum vacuum. It doesn't just operate at tiny scales. It's the cosmic driver, dark energy.
Yes, this is the ultimate link Close makes. The baseline energy of the vacuum itself, the leftover energy from all those quantum fluctuations and fields like the Higgs, it has a large-scale effect.
And that effect is anti-gravity.
Effectively, yes. It exerts a negative pressure. Instead of pulling things together like gravity, it pushes space itself apart.
Causing the expansion of the universe to accelerate.
Exactly. And it's not a small effect. Current measurements suggest this dark energy, this energy of the vacuum, makes up about 70% of the total energy density of the entire universe.
70%. It's the dominant component.
By far. The nothing is running the show, cosmically speaking.
But wait, there's a huge catch here, right? Claude mentions this, the vacuum catastrophe.
Ah, yes. The elephant in the room for physicists.
If the vacuum energy makes up 70% of the universe, shouldn't we be able to calculate its value from quantum theory?
You'd think so. We can estimate the energy expected from all those virtual particle fluctuations. The problem is, when we do that calculation,
the answer is wrong.
Disastrously wrong. Like, unbelievably wrong. The theoretical prediction for the vacuum energy density is about 120 orders of magnitude. That's a 1 followed by 120 zeros. Larger than the value we actually observe as dark energy.
120 orders of magnitude. That's not even in the same universe as the right answer.
It's arguably the worst theoretical prediction in the history of physics. It means there's something absolutely fundamental about the vacuum, about quantum gravity perhaps, that we are completely missing.
So the nothing dictates the fate of the cosmos, but we have almost no clue why it has the energy value it does.
That's the humbling reality. It's one of the biggest unsolved problems driving physics today.
Which really highlights why this book, this journey into nothing, is so important. Let's try and pull out some of the key themes, the big messages Close wants us to take away.
Okay. First, definitely, is that theme of the evolution of nothing. seeing how our understanding shifted from a simple void to this complex, active medium.
It really mirrors the progress of science itself, doesn't it? From just assuming to philosophizing to actually experimenting and finding unexpected structure.
Absolutely. And it forces us to question our basic assumptions about reality.
Second big theme.
I'd say it's that nothing is unstable and creative. That inherent restlessness of the vacuum, the quantum fluctuations. It's not just random noise.
It has consequences.
Real creative consequences. It generates measurable forces like the Casimir effect. And through the Higgs field, it's ultimately the source of mass, the very substance of matter.
So the message is almost poetic. Nothing is the wellspring of something.
Exactly. Emptiness isn't sterile, it's fertile.
Third theme.
For me, it's the unification of the microcosm and the macrocosm. This is just mind-blowing.
You know, the tiniest scales connect to the largest.
Yeah. The subatomic properties of the quantum vacuum, something unimaginably small, determine the overall structure, expansion, and ultimate fate of the entire universe via dark energy.
The invisible, controlling the visible on a cosmic scale. It's pretty humbling.
It really is. And the fourth theme, I think, running through the whole book.
Is the provisional nature of knowledge.
Yes. The story of nothing is a perfect illustration of the scientific method in action. Ideas that seemed rock solid, like Aristotle's void or the 19th century ether,
were rigorously tested against evidence.
And when the evidence didn't fit, the theories were overturned. No matter how counterintuitive the new ideas seemed, it demands a certain intellectual humility.
An openness to being wrong.
Yeah.
And to accepting really strange possibilities.
Definitely. We have to be willing to let go of common sense when nature tells us otherwise.
Speaking of profound ideas, the book has some great lines that really crystallize these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's share a few paraphrased key ideas.
Okay. How about this one? The history of science is the progressive filling of the void. What was once nothing has been discovered to be the most complex and foundational something in our universe.
That really captures the journey, doesn't it? Science keeps finding structure and richness where we initially just saw absence. It redefines reality.
Mm-hmm. Or this one, capturing the quantum view. The modern vacuum is a turbulent sea of virtual particles and is permeated by the Higgs field, an invisible substance that gives tangible mass to the elementary particles that form everything we see.
That's amazing. It means our weight, our substance, fundamentally comes from interacting with the emptiness all around us. We're shaped by the void.
And linking small to large. The energy of nothing is the most dominant force in the cosmos, acting as anti-gravity that is pushing our universe apart at an ever-increasing rate.
That just puts it starkly. The quantum realm isn't just some esoteric corner. It's dictating the entire universe's destiny.
So how does all this abstract physics actually apply to us, to the listener? What's the real-life relevance?
Well, the biggest application, maybe, is that fundamental shift in worldview we talked about.
Seeing the universe differently.
Yeah. You start to see reality not just as objects sitting in empty space, but as excitations or disturbances of space and its underlying fields. Everything emerges from this deeper substrate.
That's a pretty profound mental shift. But are there more, like, practical applications?
There are, actually. Understanding vacuum dynamics, especially things like quantum fluctuations and the Casimir effect, is becoming technologically necessary.
How so?
Well, think about developing quantum computers. They rely on maintaining and manipulating incredibly delicate quantum states. You need pristine vacuum conditions, and you need to understand any tiny forces or fluctuations happening within that vacuum.
Okay, that makes sense. Anything else?
Also in designing things like MEMS microelectromechanical systems, these are tiny machines, sensors, actuators built on silicon chips.
Right, like in your phone or car airbags.
Exactly. At those microscopic scales, the Casimir force, that force from nothing pushing surfaces together, stops being negligible. It can actually become a dominant force.
So engineers literally have to calculate the force from the vacuum to make sure their tiny devices don't stick together or malfunction?
Precisely. The energy of nothing is a real-world engineering consideration now.
Wow. And maybe a final application is just as a tool for thinking?
I think so. The whole story is a masterclass in questioning assumptions. If our most basic idea, the definition of nothing, turned out to be so wrong and so complex.
It encourages you to be skeptical of other obvious truths or common sense ideas.
Yeah. It pushes you to be open to possibilities that seem weird or counterintuitive. Because sometimes, like with the quantum vacuum, that's where the deepest truths lie.
So as we wrap up, what was the most surprising or maybe awe-inspiring thing for you from this deep dive into nothing?
For me, it's that speculative idea Close touches on right at the end, the possibility that the entire universe might have originated from a quantum fluctuation in some prior state of nothingness.
The free lunch hypothesis.
Exactly. If the total energy of the universe, adding up the positive energy of matter and radiation, and the negative energy associated with gravity, actually nets out to zero,
then maybe the universe didn't cost anything to create. It could have just popped into existence from the vacuum, consistent with the laws of physics.
The idea that all of this, everything, could ultimately come from nothing, balanced on zero, that just blows my mind. What about you? What's your lasting insight?
I think for me, it's the sheer contingency of our existence on the properties of this vacuum. It's not just background.
It's foundational.
Utterly. Without the Higgs field condensing in that vacuum, giving electrons and quarks mass, stable atoms could never have formed. Mm. No chemistry, no stars, no planets, no life.
We wouldn't be here.
We simply couldn't exist. We are, in a very real and profound sense, creatures born from the specific structure and properties of emptiness. Our existence is written into the laws of nothing.
A powerful thought to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.